Joining Jay, Brody, and I now is someone whose face and voice you have seen for years all over the television, and now they have written their story in the form of a memoir called All We Knew But Couldn't Say. Please welcome to the show, Joanne Vanacola.
Hi, thank you, Allison. Jay.
Thank you for being here. Let's get into a little bit about, you know, what you cover in the book, and then we'll get into a little bit of why you decided to write the book.
Okay. Well, there's a lot covered in the book, mm-hmm. and it took a very long time to sort of condense as much as I wrote into the pages that are in the book. It sort of starts out confronting my mother who's dying. And then I go back in time into the 70s and 80s, and it keeps dipping up back into the 2002s where she's ill in hospital. And a lot of it is just recounting a life around child abuse issues and leaving home as a teenager and ending up in the film industry as a young woman, which was not something I recommend. Mm-hmm. and then coming out. And so all of those issues dealing with industry as a young queer woman and coping with sexism, misogyny, you know, violence, homophobia, and all the things that, you know, we confront in the culture and how we navigate those things and try to stay sane.
Yeah, which is... Try is usually the optimum word.
Well, and inspire hope. I mean, it's a difficult read, but there's a journey and a point to it towards the end, right? How we deal with grief, how we deal with loss, how we deal with love and family and culture.
Well, and I think for a lot of people, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, my own personal journeys. And, you know, for me, a lot of that is mental health over my life and addiction and stuff like that. But one of the things that I've realized, and I'm super pro therapy, and I think everyone should go because it only benefits you. But what I've realized is that there are some people in the world who are honestly so afraid to look at the things that have affected them over their lives, mm-hmm. and it maybe continue to affect them, that they kind of put blinders on and just kind of put their head down and push it all away.
Right.
And I always think it's so amazing when people are able to kind of reflect on those things and try to come to terms with them, but then also to put that in something like a book, mm-hmm. to share with the world. What made you decide to write the book and to tell your story that way?
I think because I had such what I think are some unique experiences, but also I was always trying to make sense of history, and it always was being rewritten by other people in terms of, you know, whether it's family or even friends, and sometimes the industry, this kind of the way people impose their own ideologies or realities and expect that to be yours. Mm. And I always felt like I was fighting denial, and I was confronting people who had been abusive in my life, my entire life. And I would be faced with this incredible denial, and that can make you a little bit coco loco. So I had to dig really deep to take care of myself. And a lot of the times I failed at the self-care. And I did some things that, you know, were certainly harmful to myself. Mm. And I, too, ended up in therapy and did a lot of work and a lot of looking at the culture, looking at misogyny, looking at, you know, which stories get told in the world, which ones get believed in the world, and which ones get valued. And it wasn't mine. And I knew in order to take care of myself that I'd have to find a way to make my story count. And I kept writing as a young woman, and I just kept writing and writing and writing. And I didn't know what I was writing, but I'd always wrote. And then finally I thought, I'm going to write a novel, and I'm going to turn my story into a novel. And I kept myself quite safe, mm-hmm. From that. But anybody who had read the book kept saying, no, it's really a memoir. And so I took some time to think about it and decided that I would allow it to be a memoir and expose myself for the purpose not just to let it go for myself, but also with the intention of helping people if they needed it, and being a voice for the stories that couldn't be told. And I just thought that it would have more impact if I was really honest.
Speaking of self-care, going through your life, and you know, in particular, like the dark times, writing about them, kind of auditing them, going through every corner to get the most accurate depiction of them and putting them on the page. What was that like for you? Was that particularly difficult? Have you learned how to? Has it been so far away from? Has time, so much time passed that it doesn't hurt as much? What's that process like on your psyche?
At first, it was difficult because the recounting of the story, or not that I hadn't told my story to people and you know verbally, but there was something about putting it on the page and having it be permanent.
Yeah.
And when I realized its permanence, or I knew I was going to be published, and also I wanted to be emotionally authentic. So in order for people to feel what I was experiencing without clobbering them over the head, yeah. I had to dig in and know that I would be okay. It's kind of like I knew it was an old wound, and mm-hmm. it was kind of like it didn't hurt as much as I thought it might. Because, you know, once I sort of took the Band-Aid off and dug in, I realized I'd already done quite a lot of healing.
Fantastic.
If that makes sense.
One of the things that I've noticed has come up in other interviews you've done kind of around the book coming out is that in the last couple of years, there's been more of a willingness for people in the film and television industry to sort of collaborate with you on building characters that are more reflective of, you know, whether it's non-binary right. or, you know, people who are gay.
Right.
Do you feel like we are making headway in terms of telling a more variety of stories?
A little.
Okay, so that's interesting.
A little,
but there's still... Yeah. A lot of work to be done.
Oh, there's still so much work to be done. I mean, whether it's, you know, about race or about gender or sexuality, I feel like we're sort of in the beginning stages of understanding intersectional storytelling we're still tokenizing people. There's so many stories, and yet the power dynamic hasn't quite shifted that much yet. And I feel like with streaming, I have had these conversations where we talk about streaming and stories on streaming versus stories on cable and, you know, in theater and all of these. There's still a sort of very white, heterosexual, male-dominated sort of culture with respect to storytelling. And now it's like, oh, well, transgender people are popular, so let's create a character who's transgender and just put them there. And let's bring in that little non-binary Vanicola kid and put her there. Not kid, but you know, like, and that doesn't happen that much, but when it does, it's fantastic. I mean, when it happens authentically and when it's from the right place, right? So when you have creators like Jill Soloway in the States, or Lena Waithe, or Ava DuVernay, or you know, like, they've got it right. Like, they're digging deep and they're telling real stories and stories that people really need to see and hear. And I think we're starting to do that here, but it's very minimal. We don't have like the same structure financially, and we don't have the same power, let's say, as Hollywood does. But you know, I have some great people like Aaron Martin, who created, you know, Slasher and Being Erica, and he cares deeply about the people that he works with. Or, you know, that he has work for him and acting for him, and so he grows as much as I do. So he kind of allows that to be part of his programming as well. So I'm lucky.
And yeah, that is so important. And I think, you know, I know that especially for the kind of traditional networks here in Canada, they've been frustrated with Netflix, you know, building a soundstage here and all that kind of stuff for like tax reasons and whatever. But at the end of the day, Netflix is still at the forefront of helping people tell their stories and more diverse stories. Whereas if you look at, like, we have two major networks here, and, you know, again, on their streaming platforms, they're doing some things differently, but overall, they've got all the money and they're like, let's just do what we've always done. And so
safe.
Yeah, let's as little risk as possible.
Candy coated, white, straight, safe, mm-hmm.
and you know, and I think Netflix is just been such a huge force for change because, and largely because they are not tied to a network.
Yeah, and I think there are other, you know, streaming avenues as well. Like, I mean, there's some Canadian ones too, right? I forget what all their names are, but there are a bunch of them that are cropping up now, and it seems like it's just, you know, I think that that in some way is good because it allows people, the market to open up and people to really, you know, write their stories and hopefully get them into these streaming services. I think that in terms of the government and in terms of tax situations and how much money actually gets into Canada, I think that's really different in terms of Netflix. I think, the, you know, there are other countries that have way more funding than, than this country does.
Yes.
But that's a whole other conversation, and I'm not smart enough for that one. I mean, I know enough, but that's not about my book.
Right. Yeah. You don't cover that
back
is what
book.
You're saying.
No, yeah, no.
That's one of the things we can't say because we don't know.
Right, exactly.
How has the book been received by, first of all, the people that are close to you?
Yeah, that's been really fascinating. I didn't know what to expect. I was nervous, scared, terrified. And so far, it's been quite lovely. I didn't expect to be as embraced, let's say, even by my siblings. And that was lovely. I mean, not everyone's read it. And some cousins have come out of the woodwork and like, yeah, great. And I had no idea. And all these like really supportive notes and messages that I'm getting that always make me cry, and or women and strangers sending me messages saying thank you for writing your story, and just there's a lot of stuff on Goodreads, a lot of reviews, and I didn't expect that either, and they're full and they're big and there's a lot of information in them, and I just think, wow, people are really generous in terms of their hearts and their minds and their experiences with how they respond to this book, and it just feels really good to have it out now, and I kind of, this weight has been lifted around what I thought I might experience, so it's been lovely and amazing.
Oh, that's really good to hear, because I think, yeah, when you anticipate something, it's often so easy to go, here's the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
And not being able to picture that, but not really being able to necessarily picture the best case scenario.
Well, I'm ready for anything. So, I'm an old actor, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know what it is to be, you know, not well received.
Right. But so, yeah, to have that experience of like people being, you know, really positive in terms of how they felt reading your story, that must just be a relief and feel great.
Oh, it's fantastic. And even just things like getting accepted into Word on the Street, and there's another festival that I'm in that I can't name yet because the contract hasn't been signed. And there's just this sort of beginning life to this that I didn't know what to expect. And so the fact that people are embracing it and that the literary community is starting to embrace it and then they're making space for it, I just feel really excited about that. Really excited. Yeah.
Do you have another book in mind for the next one? Do you have?
I do. Yeah, I have a few. And my brain gets a little scattered when I think about them all. But I started to write a queer YA about homeless queer youth. That I really want to write, I've been thinking about. And I started to write it, and then I get distracted because I get busy with this. I also working on some programming with some women around female content on screen.
Wow.
Including non-binary characters and lesbians and black women and Latino women. And, you know, it's just sort of combining forces and trying to kind of use our lives as examples in the work that we're creating. And I think that that's the way to go because we need it. If we're going to see real reflections of who we are, whether it's in books or in screens or anything that we do.
You've been a part of so many great causes. You're putting yourself into so many great causes. And just there's so many. And it's wonderful. Where does that come from, though? Where does that, you know, sometimes people with a darker childhood go the opposite way later in life. You've gone really into helping so many different kinds of people.
Yeah, I care. I have always been an advocate. I grew up, oddly, even though I was experiencing child abuse at home, I was also one of those kids, you know, marching down the street for children's rights and learning that there was a place to actually go. And I realized it had nothing to do with the people I knew. It had to do with a bunch of strangers who were marching together for a cause and to make a change in the world. And that's sparked something that I really needed as a young person. And I took that with me my entire life as an adolescent and as a young woman. I was always sort of active in terms of human rights issues. And so in terms of domestic violence issues, women's issues, anti-racist issues, being an ally, and LGBTQ issues and child abuse, right? So all of those things really matter to me. And I just, not one of them matters. I just think all of it matters. Yeah. Because how do we create a world of equity and authenticity and diversity and freedom unless we're sort of balancing everything out?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Can't have women's rights, you know, or queer rights without black rights. I mean, there are black trans people who are in desperate situations. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we can't talk about, you know, it's not isolated human rights and equity, right? So if there's an imbalance, then we're all in trouble. So I think we have to work for all of it.
It's amazing you say freedom, because at the end goal really is that freedom of full self-expression, authentically to be who you are and be that person safely and freely. And sometimes, oddly enough, a lot of people that oppose a lot of those causes also tout freedom as a virtue that they themselves covet and say to appreciate. It's always been such an odd thing for me to witness, and I it's amazing to hear you really call out to freedom as being a virtue that is willing of putting so much effort into.
I do think it is, because I feel like, you know, just even being poor, for example, like there's no freedom in poverty. I mean, you're constantly struggling to either pay a hydro bill or feed your children if you have children, and there's no freedom there, right? No. And if you're a woman and you're pregnant and you don't want to keep your baby, and you know, laws are being changed in the states, and what freedom is there, right? When your body is treated like an incubator, what freedom is there when children are in cages? What freedom is there when black people are in cars and cops are pulling them over and they're terrified? Like, I mean, there's just so many elements that infect or affect our daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it's very complex, right?
Yeah.
And we're only, as a society, we're only as free as the least free person.
Yeah.
And so that's what a lot of people think like, well, I'm not racist, therefore I've done all I need to do. And it's like, oh, no.
That's not true. Yeah.
No, but there's so much racism, you know, or whatever it is. And so it's like, I have several kind of degrees of privilege, but the onus is on me not to get comfortable, because many people don't.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's.
I agree with that.
Can be overwhelming sometimes.
It's
but,
totally
you know.
Overwhelming. But we all are in this together. And so, like, focus where you need to. Focus where your best efforts can go. And sometimes it takes time to figure out what that is. And just keep going. And, you know, maybe 5 years from now, we're all going to do something different. And whatever that is, you know, let's just keep pushing for it. Because going back hasn't worked. And we're seeing that politically, right? Mm-hmm. Everywhere right now. And certainly for women, I mean, in terms of the Me Too movement and Time's Up and you know, like, I think the shift has happened, but we haven't quite figured out how to make things work yet, because we're still coping with misogyny and violence and sexual violence and so many issues, right?
And in so many ways, we're still learning how to talk about these things in
Absolutely.
Productive ways. And
Absolutely.
One of the best ways to understand more what issues are is storytelling and telling our story. And hey, here's a great book. Guys, All We Knew But Couldn't Say is out now, and you can go to joannevanacola.com, which then also has a link to the webpage just for the book. You can check out The Word on the Street. Oh my God.
Straight. It's not straight.
Reading is very difficult for me. wordonthestreet.ca/Toronto, which of course is an amazing book festival. And get the book.
Yeah, get the book.
Get the book.
Yeah, get the book.
Read the book. Enjoy the story.
And you'll be on Word on the Street September 21st and the 22nd.
Yeah, I think I'm doing a few events, actually. One with the Diaspora Dialogues, and one where I'm highlighted or featured, I guess, with Word on the Street. And there's another one, I think, but I can't quite... I'll learn more about all of it. But come and get a book, come and have a chat. And certainly I would say to, you know, anybody out there, women and or queer people or intersectional people in my community, you know, if you want to chat, send me a note, right? Like, I'm always open to that, because it's part of the reason why I wrote the book.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you.
And the book, again, is All We Knew But Couldn't Say. Joanne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We will be right back. You're listening to The Breakdown, Channel 167, Canada Talks.